From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? This week, it's the big interview brought to you, as always, by Pump Check Dataworks. And joining us, we have a very special guest shortly. Before we get to our guest, though, I'm going to introduce my two co-hosts. First of all, the incomparable Roger Mitchell. Roger, there.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm good. I'm really, really interested in this one. Lovely to speak to both of you.
And also joining us, as always, the landlubber himself, the captain, Giles Morgan. Are you there, mate?
I am fired up. Yes, I am here, present in Wandsworth and ready to go.
Excellent. Well, Giles, I think it probably makes the most sense for you to introduce our guest this week.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled. We've sort of kept with the North American theme, and we've got Al Guido. Many people will have heard his name. He's president of five-time Super Bowl winners, the San Francisco 49ers. And if that wasn't enough on his plate, he's also chairman of Elevate Sports Ventures. His CV for a relatively young man is pretty long and pretty illustrious. And one of his personal triumphs, I think, and I can't wait to talk to him about it, has been the overseeing of the Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, which has become, in maybe 4 or 5 years, one of the preeminent North America outdoor venues, which obviously is going through hell for obvious reasons. Al is very much a champion of innovation and technology to help drive the business of sport, and is what I would consider one of the key influences within the global sports industry.
Excellent. Well, I can't think of a better stage upon which to welcome our guests, so why don't we do that and bring in Mr. Al Guido.
Al, hello, it's Giles here. How are you doing?
Giles, what's going on, my friend?
What is going on over there? Have the fires abated a bit? Because the last time we spoke, you were choking in your car.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. It's, you know what? It is, I'm going to humble brag here a little bit. It's probably 65, 70 and bright sunshine. I can
Perfect.
See mountains right next to me.
Just
I wish
like
I could
London.
Show you
just
out my
like
window.
London. Oh no, it isn't. It's not at
I'm
all
sure.
Let me introduce you to the Motley crew. So Grant Williams.
Hey Al.
Who's one of the hosts, and Roger Mitchell. Grant's
Hello,
the one with
Hello,
a proper accent. He speaks English, and Roger speaks a dialect of English called Scottish, which no one understands. So apologies. And James is the producer in the Cayman Islands, who's really the clever one amongst us. So this is the team. And we're going to get straight into this because we know all of our time is precious. And one of the questions that we had, given you're involved so much in sports, particularly in North America, but more and more internationally, is you. I don't know how you've got time for all of your family and the dog and all the rest of it and the jobs that you have. But what has been in your own lifetime the kind of the moment of greatest fandom that made you realize that the world of sport was something that really floated your boat? Has there been a moment in your life that has just meant sports, meant everything?
I don't know if there was one moment, but obviously I grew up playing sport my whole life and played it through college. I would say the greatest sporting event that I went to was, I want to say it was the 2001 NBA basketball Eastern Conference Finals, the Philadelphia 76ers versus the Milwaukee Bucks. I grew up a diehard hoops fan. My father was obviously my parents were born in Pennsylvania, moved to South Jersey, 30 minutes south of Philadelphia. I sat in literally like the second to the last row of the arena, just whatever we could afford to get in the building. Allen Iverson to me was like the greatest athlete ever, because maybe he was my size. So it was always surprising to me how great he was. But yeah, I mean, to me, you know, he scored, I think, 54 that night. They went on to win, go on to the NBA Finals. They wound up losing to the Lakers and a good Kobe Bryant team. But honestly, Giles, like, going to sporting events with my family, there's really nothing that beat it. That's how I, you know, bonded with my mother and father. And so I've always really had a love for it.
And with that, those experiences, the hot dogs, the smells, the noise, the color, the razzmatazz, do you remember being very taken by that at an early age?
Oh, absolutely. I was hooked. My mother would say, like, I have this American football. I know the listeners won't be able to see it, but and I would literally, depending upon what time of year it was, if it was the fall, I would be throwing a football. I played quarterback up in the air in my bedroom until literally my mother would come in and say, knock it off. And then the same thing would happen with basketball. I would shoot it. And yeah, I was that kid that sprinted home from school. And if I didn't have a formal practice, you would have to turn the car lights on in the driveway, because I would continue to play. And so I always love, like, the whole Larry Bird, Magic Johnson thing, which is like, I'm going to shoot more jumpers than the next guy. And I'm going to shoot until I literally can't shoot anymore, because my biggest competitor is probably doing the same. And so, yes, from a little tyke, as early as 5 years old, I had some amount of ball in my hand, my foot, my mitt, whatever. Whatever sport you want to say, I loved it.
Al, let me ask you just, because I'm a huge Hoops fan too, and Allen Iverson was, I would argue, inch for inch, pound for pound, one of the greatest who's ever played the game. Just growing up in Philly, because he was so important to that town at that time, you know, a real superstar that came with everything. He came with the talent, the raw skill, but also the edge, the problems, the attitudes. I mean, he was so, to me, so representative of Philly. Just talk about the importance he had in your life in the city of Philadelphia.
Grant, you nailed it on the head. There are certain athletes that I think in any town that you're in that sort of represent what that town is, you know, feels like. And so Philadelphia, right, we're kind of that chip on our shoulder town, right? When you're nestled in behind New York or next to New York, obviously. You haven't won as many titles. You know, your most famous athlete's probably a fictional character named Rocky Balboa. And so for us, like, to have this kid, you know, grew up the way that he did and go through the struggles and being, you know, sort of underweight, undersized, but packed a big punch. Like, it was the perfect representation of what I thought Philadelphia to be. And so for me personally, you know, my father was a truck driver in Philadelphia. My mother was an administrator, right? You know, you grew up in this blue collar family. And like I said, like, you'd pull whatever dollars you could just to even get into the show. And what I loved about Allen was, there wasn't a night where I felt like you bought your ticket. And this was before, like, the body rest or whatever they call it. Like, Allen never rested, right? There, every single night, the guy would show up and play his heart out
and get pounded.
Whether you won or lost, you just knew it meant something different to that kind of guy. And that's it sort of embodied Philadelphia. That's why we all love it.
Al, is that why your dog is called Rocky?
Yeah, it's exactly right, Giles. So my my three little girls, we wanted to get a dog. My wife and I have had German Shepherds our whole lives. But we hadn't had one since my oldest was about 3 or 4. So Santa Claus was kind enough to bring Rocky. And we didn't know what to name it. And so my girls went into the playroom and they're writing these names on the whiteboard. And Dad, as you can imagine, getting ready for the holidays, was watching, of course, television. And, you know, if you turn on TNT or TBS, it's essentially Rocky 1 through Rocky 5. Rocky 5, I don't watch. But I literally, they wrote all these names down and I was like, these names are rubbish. So I'm going to, I'm like, what about Rocky? And they're like, why is it Rocky? I'm like, what do you mean, why is it Rocky? And I took him out to the room and Rocky, I think 2 was on, and I made him watch a little bit of it. And so that's Rocky. So we're debating whether or not we get a second and we call it Apollo or Mickey or whatever, but we'll figure it out.
Brilliant.
Continuing on the kind of, like, personal background stuff, which I think is really important, because there's a lot of people that listen to our podcast that want to get into sports, and a lot of them are young people. The thing I found really interesting about your background, you alluded to it there a little bit, you know, really tough background, The themes that come out from all the reading I've done about yourself is grit, hard work. You like phrases like wartime CEO. You like Simon Sinek. I want to ask you this. Could you share with us, because I just found it when I heard this story amazing. Could you share with us the Jerry Jones email recruitment story? I think people would love that.
No, thank you, Roger. Well, I always say there's no substitute for hard work. That's for sure. And so I was working at the Phoenix Coyotes, now the Arizona Coyotes, an NHL hockey club. And I was going to interview for a sales manager position to work on behalf of the Jones family and for a guy named Chad Estes, who's certainly have been a mentor of mine. And he, at the time, I think I was 27 years old, and I was living in Arizona with my wife, and we used to joke like we were double income, no kids. Arizona's a good place to be. And I sort of got caught up in all the wrong things. Like I was the sales manager title was below what I'd had. I wasn't sure if the dollars were going to be the same. And I went down there and I thought I did a good job on the interview, but frankly, it's one of those pits in your stomach where you know when you walk out that you could have done a better job, and sort of you're not sure if you're going to get a chance to kind of prove or convince these people that you should get hired. And the next day I woke up and I was copied incorrectly on an email that, paraphrasing, said something along the lines of, good guy, qualified to do the job. Not sure he's passionate about it given where his life is and his wife and et cetera. And so as I sat and stewed for a while and paced back and forth between my bedroom in Arizona, I think I responded with, obviously it wasn't supposed to be copied on this email. But if the Dallas Cowboys are not to hire me, it might be one of the worst mistakes they ever make in franchise history, or something along those lines. And I got a call about 30 minutes later from Stephen Jones, and who's Jerry Jones's son, and Chad Estes and the rest of the crew, and I got hired. And so luckily enough, as I said, no substitute for hard work, but you also need a little luck in the world. And luckily, Alex Shiner sounds and types a whole lot like Al Guido when you type, and I'm sure we've all done it, when you start to type a word or a name into your email box and you just hit enter, they hit enter a little too fast and Al Guido got copied.
Fantastic. And Al, obviously right now what's going on in the world is the words like unprecedented are used a lot, but we are facing something that has never really been seen, certainly in the modern world. The sports industry is certainly reeling and certainly going through challenges. In that wartime thing that Roger mentioned too, how are you inspiring the people who work with you in your various ventures to cope with the battening down of the hatches as the hurricane roars through, knowing that at some point in the future that there will be a peace, albeit maybe a different type of calm?
Well, I think the last part of what you said, Giles, is how we motivate any person is this will not last, right? And I think sports is sort of the perfect, call it analogy or call it, comparison to what we're going through, right? I always say in sports, like when you work on the business side, you can never really get caught up in wins and losses. Sort of wins and losses to me are like market conditions, right? So you need to have a business strategy based off where you're at, what team you're selling, what product you have, et cetera. And then obviously, you could have some injuries on the pitch or the field that might change things, but that's not going to totally rework your strategy. And COVID, as we all know, has been brutal. Honestly, the most brutal probably on the sports entertainment industry, but it won't last. Tough times don't last, tough people do. And so we're going to grit and bear through it. And the best way I know how to, Giles, is just to do the work. Roll up your sleeves. I've never been afraid to get in the mix with my people. And so that means getting on phone calls with sponsors or getting on phone calls with season ticket members or talking to, our 30 or some clients at Elevate Sports Ventures to figure out a way through this. But we will get through this. And honestly, we'll come out stronger.
And are you getting the clarity from the authorities in your various ventures, you know, with something we're seeing all over the world, particularly here in the UK, but I suspect in Europe and all over the place, the guidelines seem to change. That must make things very tricky, where no one knows which way the North Star is right now.
No, that's exactly right. No, I mean, we get some clarity, but in fairness to them, they don't know either. I mean, we're, what, 8-9 months into a pandemic? And so I try not to, like, get caught up in the, oh my God, everything's going to change forever. Like, I don't actually think that's true. I think we're certainly living in a time that's unprecedented. What I love about this time, though, and honestly, you know, we sort of Elevate is somewhat benefited, and we get called a lot about this stuff, is there's never been a time, frankly, in the world, in my opinion, since I've been in sports, that we've all faced the exact same challenge, right? In America in 2007, you know, obviously during the financial crisis, now that rocked the world, but it rocked each individual state a little different. It rocked each sport a little different. This is rocking everybody the same. And so when you lose gate receipts, right, it's very difficult to run your business. And so every single person I talk to, whether it's across the pond or whether it's here, we are all talking about the same exact thing, like how to get out of this, the best way to do so, what we're all hearing, what we're all seeing, what time frame we think things are going to come back. And that has been uplifting in the sense of we're kind of all in this together and we're going to come out of it all together. Now, it might change depending upon where in the world and how your government deals with COVID. But I do believe that when we come out of it, it'll be a good thing.
Al, you mentioned there in answering that the thing that it's no longer just about the performance on the field, win and loss. You have to have a strategy. One of the big themes that we always talk about is exactly that, and how sport, whether it likes it or not, is being taken down a route of becoming content, entertainment, lifestyle, brand. That's something that at Elevate you're deeply, deeply involved in. But the question we always wrestle with and would love to hear your view on is, how the hell do you find the balance between the traditional sport that all of us, you know, even when you're talking about the NBA in 2001, all of us know what that means, the traditions and the memories. How do we transition to these new audiences and still keep it real?
You know, Roger, I think I heard you on one of these podcasts talk about, you know, challenges with our own kids and how they consume sport. And yet you're right, it's very different. My daughters consume it different than I did. And in their stage in life, don't live and die with it as much as I might have.
Yeah.
You know, I think I can't, like I said, I would rush home to play or watch SportsCenter. But what I would say is, sort of the human truths, there's no substitute for being at a live sporting event. And I often say sports is the great human connector. It might be the only last human connector, in the way of you could be in a coffee shop and everyone's staring at their phone and you walk out and you don't even know what someone looked like, who was in line. You just go in and you go out. If you're in an arena or a stadium or whatever, you're immediately friends with a complete stranger within the first 5 minutes.
True.
And nowhere in the world does that happen ever. And, you know, the hero feature is always the sport. And I think at times, folks like myself, and I even get caught up into this, right? We get caught up into the next headline, to the next headline, to the next really cool jazzy thing to do inside of the stadium. And yet, what people really come for is the camaraderie with their family or their business colleagues and to watch sport. And so, my thing is keep the hero feature the hero feature. Yes, we do have to commercialize it. We all understand that. We all have to distribute content in different ways. But Roger, the way I keep it somewhat real, especially with my own children, is I always want to take them to an event because there's nothing like it. You can stream it on your phone. You can watch it on a 4K or 8K, whatever that comes. But being in that audience, there's only so many people that can say that. And I still believe no matter what happens in the world, I still believe that will remain solid.
Al, I have to say, I'm totally with you on that. I mean, I think there's nothing that replaces that feeling of being there and going back on Monday to the office and all the guys who watched it on the game, but you were the guy in the stadium and you know they're all jealous as hell. And when you talk about this, trying to focus everything around the sport, for someone who grew up as a huge Hoops fan, you know, Hoops and the NFL are two totally different products in terms of focusing the audience on the sport itself. You know, the stop-start nature of the NFL, the long breaks, the long downtimes between plays and stuff. How do you think about trying to bridge that gap and trying to keep the sport the central focus in a product like NFL football?
Grant, I think it's just being obvious with there is a lot of breaks, right? In the world of the NFL, I would often say, and people are somewhat mesmerized by this, but the actual true sport is probably somewhere like 25 to 28 yeah. minutes of 4 hours. And I was fascinated, I think almost 15, 16 years ago now, I came across the pond and I went to an Arsenal match. And my way of going into a match, which was, you know, with my phone in hand and looking up all the stats and the content, and yet I'm looking around at the people next to me, and I just bought a ticket off the street and went by myself. You know, I figured I'd just go grab a couple pints and have fun. I looked down at my phone and you would have thought like that people looked over at me like, what's wrong with right. me? You know, like the match is going on. And it was very different for an American where in football, you know, those breaks are opportunities for us and or the consumer to share what they want with the world. Right. And I think that, you know, we sort of built our stadium Levi's, as we call it, a software-driven stadium, because we built enough Wi-Fi and capacity in this building. Literally, we built 10 times the NFL mandate because we just saw the future was in this. Like, not to say pretty boards aren't great and LED isn't fantastic, but I think you have to be the realistic. Like, I love what Mark Cuban said when he didn't want anybody staring down at their phones during an NBA game. And while I agree with that, I also think that there's, you know, listen, we have to be honest in the sense of people want to be connected. And when there's not sport going on or there's breaks in the moment, they're going to get connected to something yeah. else. And that's okay. And so my thing is, I'd rather deliver them the content, 49ers-based content or our clients-based content that they're consuming versus consuming anything else. So why not produce things and deliver them things that we think are valuable to them in the moment?
Al, you mentioned there football, soccer. You guys have obviously got an important stake in Leeds United. So I'd like to use that, if you allow me, to ask a really, really difficult question. One of the big things that's becoming clear now as American financiers, American owners come into European sport is a different cultural outlook. You guys have got closed leagues. You think of it much more as a business. Our sport starts as amateur, Corinthian, and it's kind of like reluctantly become professionalized probably in the last 25 years. When you, as a shareholder in a club that is now in the Premiership after so many years of struggle, and then the day after you hear talk about a European Super League that doesn't include Leeds United, how do you think that this is all going to play out? How are we going to reconcile the brutal economics of sport as a commercial product with, you know, how we do over here with promotion, relegation, the pyramids? You're probably uniquely placed in this because you're sitting there with the shareholding in Leeds United.
Roger, it's a really good question. You know, I think the commercialization of sport I'd like to think it's been happening for a while and not just recently with new ownership coming in. I do think some of it is sort of forced economics, right? You have to live and you have to continue to sustain, and these sports are for-profit sports. As I mentioned, though, I think there's a balance with understanding that it's still a community asset and it's still about the supporters and the followers of the team and the club. But the reality is, right, if you look at the Fair Play Act, or if you looked at some, you know, other things that have happened inside of that world, all of our businesses, not just sport, need to continue to evolve in a way in which allows us to sustain. And I think if COVID has taught us, it's taught us a lot of things, but I do think that it, you know, one of the things it's taught us is sustainability of revenue streams and or the business of the sport needs to continue to evolve and needs to continue to have different avenues of commercialization, meaning, you know, gate receipts are great. Sponsorship is well needed. Content is needs to be widely distributed and paid for and watched. And so I don't really have an opinion yet. And I'm not as educated as I should be on a super league or a non-super league. I would say in the premiership, there's no one specific way to go win, right? If you look at, you know, a wage bill from one club to the next, there's, of course, obviously those who spend more time perform well on the field. But we've seen that now evolve over time. If you go to an American sport that's going on now, look at the World Series. The Tampa Bay Rays and the Los Angeles Dodgers, if you look at their wage bills, are dramatically different.
Yep.
Yeah. And but so I've always there's the right way per the club, right? And I think every club is different. And there was a right way at Leeds, and Andrea has done an amazing job with that club. And so is Angus on the commercial side. And so I don't know. I think we need to just, we need to be honest with ourselves that we want these sports to continue on. And if we want these sports to continue on and we want our clubs to be competitive on the pitch or the field, the reality is we have to live with the fact that they have to be commercialized. Because that's just the way of the world, right? To be able to spend what you need to spend to put a proper team on the pitch that people want to support and follow and win, there has to be revenue streams coming in the door to do that.
Can I ask you a slight tangent of a question? But I've watched just about every single one of these All or Nothing, the Netflix documentaries, the Amazon documentaries that take you inside sports clubs. I'm sure you as a sportsman have watched some of those. How do you look at those? Do they appear like enormous opportunities to you? Do they feel like just a field of banana skins as far as the eye can see? And would you consider doing one of those?
We have considered doing them, Grant. I laugh and smile because sometimes coaches in America, and maybe they're the same around the board, our coach Kyle Shanahan, he's a little bit more upfront with sharing. Some coaches won't even tell you whether they use mayo or mustard on their turkey sandwich. So they don't love these All or Nothing. I think All or Nothing's great. I think Hard Knocks are great. The challenge, Grant, is with All or Nothing, right? Like you have to be a diehard sports fan because you're watching something that's already happened. And the thing about sports, right? It's great. It's you know, I used to say you can't TiVo it. Now that's not obviously the right vernacular now, but right. You can't tape sport, right? That the one great thing about sport is it's live. You have to watch it live, in my opinion. And so what I like, we have a series here, called Brick by Brick at the San Francisco 49ers. And so we'll take a snippet of content over the course of a week and then we'll send that out. And fans want behind the scenes look at what happens in any kind of sport. And so I feel like every single one of these sports teams are now, frankly, content companies in and of themselves, right? Now you might use Amazon to distribute or you might use Apple to distribute it, but you yourself are a content. So we have an entire studio here. We have 20 or so people that film content on a daily basis because we know our fans are consuming it.
Al, something that anyone who's involved in the sports industry knows, talk to that point about content and appeal. And we're going to be doing a special soon about the Olympics, actually, and what the relevance is of the Olympics going forward. A lot of sports there that really require IOC funding to stay alive. And are they still appealing? But to take COVID as an accelerant, maybe, and maybe a lot of this was coming down the line anyway, but what sports do you see accelerating in the next 10 years that maybe sports that have either been hiding in the on the touchline, literally, or ones that are just going to grow and grow? Is there anything that you see which is going to be real growth that if I was to give you 10 British pounds for you to have a little wager on, that you might say might be bigger sports in 10 years or so?
Yeah, Giles, I think it depends on where you are in the world is the answer. If you're in America, I don't think there's any denying that the growth of Major League Soccer is staggering. If you look at franchise values, if you look at the number of teams that have come online, if you look at the size of the stadia that they're building, Elevate Sports Ventures, we represent 6 MLS clubs right now. Honestly, my 3 girls play club soccer. It is massive over here in the States, the amount of people that are playing it. Across the pond, like, I love rugby. I know it has a place in everyone's heart. But I think it comes and goes with the athletes themselves a little bit, right? Like, we used to say, when I was growing up, it was like the golden age of tennis and John McEnroe, and it was never going to come back. Well, it did. It came back in the form of Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic. And so I don't ever try to get caught up in like, well, it'll never be this way again, or it'll never grow. It was like golf, Tiger Woods, and it'll never be this way again. Well, now there's a whole host of young guys who can play the sport, as you know, Giles. And so I think that sports will continue to evolve. Obviously in America, soccer is probably the most, if you look at the CAGR growth of soccer on any relevant metric, it's certainly the highest performing growth stock, as you would say, in America.
Al, let's bring it back to NFL just now. We are in this world of cut the cords, of ESPN subscriptions going down, of skinny bundles, the whole nine yards, you know better than me. That notwithstanding, it is rumored that the new deals for the NFL are going to be very chunky. Some people even call them loss leaders for the broadcasters, but I guess NFL won't worry about that. What I want to ask you is, how long do you think the main broadcasts and linear television are still going to dominate, as opposed to the kind of other playbook, direct to consumer, know your niche, market to them super hard? When do you think you see the tipping point? I was reading somewhere saying that in the next few years, it will be less than 50% of households in America will have cable TV. When do you think that tipping point comes, and do you think sport is ready for it?
I think sport is definitely ready for it. I'm not sure I agree with the tipping point on the timeline, to be frank. What I would say is, I think the NFL has done a great job in doing this. Given where I grew up, right? You take a pizza pie. I think, the content companies and or how sport got distributed might have been in 3 or 4 slices. I think the pie will continue to be there. I just think the number of slices will be very different. And so you've seen it in the NFL where Fox does Thursday night, but it's streamed on Amazon as well in the digital properties, and what Verizon has done. And so I think a lot gets made up about ratings, and in any given election year, ratings are always down, right? If you look right now, if you're a broadcaster, if you're a sponsor, you're buying two products. You're buying live sports and you're buying cable news. Cable news is up 40% year over year, right? Live sports, while there's a lot of discussion, oh, down this much. Look at it down versus where other broadcast television is. So our actual, like, the spread is actually grown, right? In the fact of more people are consuming live sporting event versus what they were consuming in broadcast television. So if you're a content distributor, you need sport more now than ever. And so that is the reason why we all feel really good about the next content deals. And yes, you're right, Roger. The slices of the pie will get different and they'll grow. I think the good thing that the NFL has done, now maybe that's because there's a number of providers here, which might be a little bit different than the rest of the world. They're going to meet you where you are. And what I mean by that is, my daughters don't have a television in their bedrooms because they don't turn on television the way I do.
Yeah.
But that does not mean they won't consume sport, right? They'll watch it on their iPad or they'll do whatever. I am in my couch or my bedroom watching it on my television via linear broadcast television, content. And so I think as long as we deliver it where you are, no matter what age demographic you're at, then we'll have done our job.
Okay, so let me follow on there. That was a super positive outlook for the NFL in terms of the new deal, and obviously that drives everything. Let me come at it from the bottom. We've talked a lot here about college football and how much it's going to suffer from COVID. And my colleagues have said, you know, some of the big colleges will be okay because of their endowments and everything like that. But when you look at, you know, the trouble of, you know, publicly funded ones like Iowa State, and you know that politically it's going to be very difficult for governments to bail out sport. Do you ever see the really radical change for the NFL where you maybe even think about a minor league and use that as your feeder and the whole college football environment and the draft and kids going to college for 4 years that they just go directly into the minors and then the NFL?
I don't know that I see that anytime soon, Roger, but I think the concept of it is, you know, certainly could happen. What I would say to that is, I think the NFL and our growth strategy is, there's the growth strategy before you get to the professional leagues. There's also the international components of the growth strategy. And so I think we've done a really nice job overseas in some of what I would call our event-based strategy, right? We host games and they've done really well.
Yep.
Now you've seen us start to distribute content on, you know, specific, you know, with specific companies that are obviously located. The question I always have is, you know, what are we doing in Canada? What are we doing in Mexico? It seems to be really easy. You've seen the NBA expand to those countries, maybe not obviously Mexico, but, you've seen it expand inside of the Canada. The Toronto Raptors have had a tremendous amount of success. So I'm really excited about the opportunities that exist here. On college front, Roger, I do think, look, the model, I don't know if the model was broken or if it's just time to evolve. I think it's probably more of the latter. You see name, image, likeness now come into the sport, right? Yep. And that is very difficult to manage. Like, I liken it a little bit to what happened with gambling a couple years ago before it started to get legislation at the state level here in the U.S. No one truly knows how to manage it just yet. No one truly knows what it means. It might cannibalize some college dollars on sponsorships, because what if sponsors just decide to sponsor a player versus sponsor a university? And so there's so many things that need to get worked out in my mind. And I think, you know, if I were in, you know, we spend a lot of time in college sports right now, how they look at their, you know, sponsorship rights, whether they were on an MMR, multimedia rights deal with one of their providers, or whether they took it in-house, how they handled their donation packages, the endowments, all of that, frankly, needs to get reworked, because it's obvious if you just lose one season and there's this much carnage, something needs to change.
Yes.
Al, as you know, in my former life, I had the pleasure and privilege of investing in a number of sports around the world, often with great assumption and not a lot of precision, as I think is probably typical of quite a lot of sponsors, certainly for the first 40 or 50 years of the modern sports industry. Things are changing now. Obviously, again, with COVID, but also just market forces, we're seeing private equity coming into sports a lot more, particularly from your side of the pond. Do you think, a general question this, and I obviously it changes depending on the rights holder, but do you think sports know their fan base well enough compared to other industries?
Not at all, Giles. I think we're getting much better, but I was always fascinated. To me, sports always felt like movie theaters. You would open up doors and people would come. And there was not a lot of sophistication behind how we marketed our properties and or the data that existed at each one of these clubs. That has changed. And a lot of that is frankly, I think some of it is forced change in the sense of there's so much competition now to gain a sponsor that you have to have the data and metrics to be able to show that sponsor as to what their, call it, return on investment might look like, or I say return on objectives might look like. And so you need to match the art and the science. It used to be just that you would sell the art or the dream. Now you need both. I also think if you look at, and this is a lot of the reasons why I started Elevate Sports Ventures, is the marriage of art and science. Because if you look at any sport, percentage of capacity that's sold on a season ticket base has generally been declining in most sports over the course of the last 10 years. And so what that's led to is a supply-demand issue that, frankly, there's a lot of different ways to solve that. But the truth of the matter is the best way to solve that is smart pricing, smart marketing, right? Smart distribution channels, whether that be content and or ticketing. And so, Giles, I think that is probably... if you think about the sort of the proliferation of content that has happened within the streaming platforms, where that's now happening is within the sponsorship verticals, the ticketing verticals, the premium verticals, at every single one of these clubs. And frankly, I still think we're probably years behind some other sectors of business.
Al, let me ask you, coming back to the challenges of coronavirus, obviously, we've seen the NBA, it seemed to me, did actually a fantastic job in that bubble they created down in Florida, did a really good job. Obviously, the viewing figures for TV were incredibly disappointing, given the fact that they, more than anybody, I think, conducted just about as close to a regular postseason as you could possibly have. We've seen stadiums getting closed left and right. I think you guys have had problems with Santa Clara mandating closures of stadiums and practice facilities and stuff. How do you deal with that in the position you're in, both from an operational standpoint and also from a standpoint of trying to deal with governments, whether it be local or federal, at a time when things are changing so rapidly? It must be an extraordinary challenge for you.
It is, Grant. It's the biggest challenge that we all have right now is sort of the unknown and the moving targets, right? Because arguably, until we have, more broadly wide or, the ability to have therapeutics and or a vaccine, we are at the mercy of the spread of COVID in the sense of every single one of our counties and or states is looking at, sort of positivity rate per X, right? You add your number. And then inside of that, they all have different, our governor said, well, if we have a positivity rate of this, you're now in orange or you're now in yellow or you're now in red. And then you got to try to figure out when you're in those color coded, what that might mean for you. And that's the hard part is it changes, right? So for one month, you might be doing really well. And the next month, you might not be doing so well. And how do you operate that? So that's certainly not easy. On the NBA front, I think it's super fascinating to dig. There's so much content going on right now, right? We've never been in a time where literally every sport is on TV.
Right, yeah.
And certainly I think that has led to probably some lower numbers. But I think the other part, Grant, is, and I always used to say this, and maybe it's been proven true a little bit, is, when I'm a huge Hoop fan and I watched every single game in the playoffs as much as I could with the schedule, not having a live audience matters.
Yes.
I mean, let's just be honest. Like you could put on the two best teams in the world, but if there's no atmosphere, and that's why I would always say, like, people are like, oh, I don't want to go. I don't need to go to games anymore. I'll watch it on my couch. But you're not really watching at the same level you were if there's not some people in the stands. And so
totally agree.
To me, all it did was prove what I always believed in my heart of hearts, which is the atmosphere and the hero feature together is what sells. You take one of them out and it's really, really hard. And honestly, we're all thirsting for sport because it was off television for so long. But let's be honest, it's not the same without the fans there. It's just not.
And when looking at the viewing figures of those NBA finals, what are the NFL owners take from that? Are there adjustments that they can think about making, or is it too early in the season to really have that data at their fingertips?
Honestly, Grant, it's too early. Yeah. And the truth of the matter is it's a snippet of time. That's why I think you got to take sort of the long approach on this one, right? And there's so much going on. It's the recipe, right? If you're a chef and you're making a stew, I mean, COVID, political climate, social unrest. The reality is it's a really tough time in the world right now. Probably the toughest time I've ever seen in my lifetime. It's the toughest. And, you know, you combine all those together. And I think you can get really caught up in saying us, you know, geez, we're screwed, right? Like we're not, we'll be okay. We need to get through this election cycle. Certainly, I think our country and other countries, systemic racism is an issue, was an issue. Hopefully we can do a better job and it won't be an issue in the future. But I do think sports is a unifying force. And I love the fact that what I've seen is, you know, sports come back on television, people tell proper stories, people gather around their televisions and they're sharing it with each other and they're texting each other around cheering for their teams. That lends itself to, in my opinion, some semblance of normalcy we frankly all need a little bit more of. And I think we will look back on this time and appreciate what sports did to bring people together and frankly to amplify messaging that needed to be amplified. And there's no better way to do that than through the lens of watching our favorite athletes and teams.
Al, if I didn't ask this, some people would say, why didn't you ask it? So when you say all of that, your chap was the chap that started the knee. I think you've probably said publicly that you yourself wouldn't, but you understood everything that was going on in his head. How do you feel that sport has dealt with the pressures, and there are pressures, of that hashtag? Have we just gone along as virtue signaling, or is it something that's contributed in some way also to those ratings coming down? And it's easier for you to talk about this. Probably you're the best qualified person to make a statement about where you see this from, where it's come from.
Roger, I say do the right thing even when it's hard. What Colin Kaepernick did, what he continues to do, is bring something that is unbelievably important to light. And yes, not everybody agreed with the method of protest, but I find it impossible not to agree with the content of that protest or the message behind that protest, right? And truthfully, Roger, I think a lot gets said when we went through that. I had this conversation with a member from the NBA yesterday. Don't get caught up in the news cycle, right? It's constant. Yep. And yep. I promise you, everyone told us at that time, oh, you're going to lose all these sponsors. You're going to lose all these season ticket holders. People are going to stop following you. Fast forward 4 years, none of that has happened. The 49ers have not been more popular than they are ever in their life cycle, right, with the fan base. And so I don't know. I always say in this sort of gotcha world that we live in, we forget often that Colin Kaepernick was not the first athlete to protest something that he or she disagreed with in the world, right? We all remember Tommy Smith with his fist in the air. We remember Muhammad Ali. We remember these moments because they stood out for the right reasons. And I don't believe I would kneel, but that doesn't mean, like, again, I couldn't have agreed more with what he was trying to articulate and the attention that he wanted to, you know, bring to that. And what I've told the folks at the NBA is that was amazing for our market. Like the amount of dialogue we had with the police and our players, and our players went on ride-alongs with cops to learn, frankly, what police have challenges with, right? And so it brought a community together unlike no other. Now, what you had to be ready to do is you had to be ready to have hard conversations, right? And they were not, I mean, I promise you, they were not easy. There was times where you'd be in a room and people would be really irate, right, for their own reasons. And so what I would always say is I think you'll look back on what the NBA did this past playoffs and or the bubble, and I think what you'll find is they created a tremendous amount of change for the good. Now, I think what's the York family here has done an amazing job. I mean, we've donated, you know, $40 million over our life cycle, 15 in the last 3 years, in this market, right, to make sure that we foster education, diversity, right, all the things that frankly matter to make the changes that we need to make. Because it's one thing to say these things, it's another to act on them. And actions are louder than words. Absolutely. And what I would say is this is a cycle we have to break. We have to break it at the lowest, at the youngest levels with education. I think about what this pandemic, right? I can get real caught up in saying, oh my God, this is terrible for my life, for my business or whatever. Think about a child who grows up in a socioeconomic environment that doesn't have the dollars and or the access to technology to even learn and grow at this point. And then think about what that spread looks like if you're a have or a have not. And that is the cycle that we're talking about trying to break. And I think these sports, frankly, people say like, well, you don't have to just play sports. No, we have very small companies, but very big brands. And our opportunity to amplify the good is bigger than anybody else. And if we do that, I really, truly think we can make change for the better.
That's an amazing answer, Al. Really one of the best I've ever heard. If I could lighten it up a little bit with a question that I think is both to Elevate and also to the 49ers. You've got three girls and I've got a teenage girl in the house as well. And I've noticed that, you know, she will say things about the NBA and the people in the NBA, you know, with a cool factor, and the NFL never comes up. And I'm just wondering, and maybe this is flippant, but I've always thought this, as sport moves towards much more celebrity and younger and the TikTok world and the Twitch world, how much of a problem is the fact that your boys wear masks and you don't see their faces?
A big problem, Roger. We need to do a better job with, you know, I always say, tell the helmet off stories. Our players are more than what they do on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night. And the one chance, like, there's pros and cons, right? There's pros to having 17 regular season games and playoffs. From a content perspective, every game matters, right? The hype, the buildup, you know, you don't deal with your random Tuesday night that feels like it doesn't matter. The flip side of that is you don't get as many opportunities to know the athlete. And so my girls, right, like they call George Kittle, George Skittle. and they love him because of his personality, right? Like they, of course, know he's a good tight end. But the reality is they know him more for the antics and the hair flop and everything else, right? Now, they might know Jimmy Garoppolo for different reasons. My 11-year-old is, you know, she's starting to enjoy the you know, lads. And so Jimmy's a pretty face. And so, but yeah, Roger, we the NFL, and I honestly think Tim Ellis, who we hired, the CMO of the NFL right now, that came from kind of the Activision Blizzard world, right? You've seen him bring influencers in forms of other different sport, right? Like Ninja, right? Ninja is now talking to our players, are playing with our players. That to me is, I think, what we all need is we need our guys to be our players to become not just footballers, but celebrity. And if they can become a celebrity, we've done our job.
And Al, to take that, talking about collision sports like NFL, rugby is obviously the other collision sport where masks, well, they're not necessary, but for a lot of the players probably should wear masks. It might make them more marketable. Do you think rugby has a will grow in the US, particularly with sevens growing, the whole Olympic inclusion? Do you think that rugby has sort of, particularly West Coast, and I know in Colorado and places, sort of flirted with the rugby world and maybe on the East Coast and the universities? Do you think it'll grow, or do you think it'll always be niche and slightly out of the way?
I think it will definitely grow, Giles. I don't know if it'll ever be the dominant player, but you don't have to be, right? You can elevate. We're working with someone right now to grow rugby in the U.S. And so I think that has a tremendous opportunity, as you mentioned, with the things that are coming up. But frankly, this is where, give Paul Rabil unbelievable credit, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, who would have thought?
Absolutely.
I mean, I grew up on the East Coast where maybe lacrosse was a big deal, but now, we see what Paul and Mike have done with the PLL and how
wonderful.
They've taken a concept and sort of spun it on its head. I don't know. I grew up as, I guess, a salesman. So I would say, you give me good content, good sport on the field with a really proper, hardworking strategy. Honestly, folks in America, they like great athletes and they like to watch it. And so I don't know. And I think NBC did a great job with the PLL. So honestly, if rugby had the same amount of support and or people behind it, I think it could be very successful.
Our last question, you've been so generous with your time. This is an easy one. We in this side of the pond with soccer, football, have had a dreadful time with VAR, the video referee. I have watched the NFL and the last two or three years, this debate about what is a catch. I see you shaking your head there. How do we reconcile this? Because we all know what a catch is. We all know what an offside is. But the people operating the machines seem to have an attitude of form over substance. How do we get through this?
Roger, it is. I honestly, I could have taken 30 minutes on this one. I think the reality is, I don't know how you feel over there, but you got to get to the worst pain point before you can ever auto correct. As a person who played American football through college, I've never been more frustrated with what the hell a catch is. I played wide receiver. I don't know. I see it. It looks like a catch. I mean,
yeah.
Dez Bryant caught the ball in Green Bay. He caught it. Let's just all be honest. I think that this is where technology at times is an amazing thing, and also sometimes some of the worst of things, right? There's so, last night I'm watching the World Series and there was a play at second base where he looked out to me from the catcher throw and he was out, but it was unbelievably close. And these poor referees, they're trying to referee things in real time. And, then all of a sudden you slow it down and you put it in 4K and the most crystal clear image possible. And it's like, oh, well, maybe we got it right or wrong, but I don't know. I think that I was joking with my mother last night, and, my daughter's is TikTok or whatever, and my daughters play all kinds of sports. And there's obviously this participation of sports in America has gone down really across the board. Everybody talks about football, but truthfully, it's gone down. And we, I think, as parents, we're responsible in the, our kids not consuming it the way we did. And so I think there's so much to be learned from team sports. Hard work, camaraderie, being a great teammate, leadership, right? Adversity. I mean, literally in American football, or any sport, you get knocked down, you have to get back up. And I personally think, and I sometimes force my daughters, I know that's probably wrong, because you don't know what you don't know at 9 and 11 years old. And so go out and play. Put the phones down, get away from it. EQ is as important as IQ. And a lot of EQ is learned by playing sport and dealing with that. And frankly, I think we all need a little bit more of that in our lives and a little less technology.
Al, I just want to share one quick story with you, Al. My eldest daughter, who will be 30 next year, in 1998, I forced her to sit and watch the last game of the NBA Finals when Jordan hit the shot at the buzzer to beat the Utah Jazz. I mean, I had to put her in a headlock. So you're sitting here and you're watching this with me, and one day you'll thank me. And it took about 10, 12 years until I finally overheard her saying to one of her friends, "I watched that game with my dad." And I was like, yeah, that's it.
It's the greatest, Grant. It's the greatest. Like, you were probably watching The Last Dance.
Yeah.
And she was probably sitting there going, "Oh my God, I would have missed all of that."
That's exactly right.
I mean,
she called me and said, "Dad, I watched The Last Dance. Do you remember that game?" I was like,
I love it. Put the damn thing down. Go play and go watch, you know? You got plenty of time in the rest of your life to or do whatever.
Well, Al, in wrapping up, I was also a team sport player. I played rugby. And as you know, in rugby, the camaraderie very much ends with a drink after the game. And for Roger and I, who are very much in Europe, it's about 6 p.m., which means the sun's gone over the yardarm. So he's
happy
allowed
hour.
He's allowed an Italian white. And I'm, well, it's beer o'clock here in London. For you, you've got an entire day ahead of you. So we'll really just wanted to thank you for giving of your time. You've got a very busy schedule. Fascinating for our listeners, particularly to get that real US perspective. It's been an absolute joy to have you on the show. And thank you very much for coming on. And we hope maybe that we'd like to book you in for about a year's time and see where we're all at.
You got it. Thank you so much for having me. Go enjoy your pints or your wine. I appreciate
Thank you,
it.
Al. Thank you.
Take care.
So bye-bye. Much. Cheers.
Bye-bye. All right, guys.
Well, gents, that was enormously enjoyable. What a great guy. I really enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah, I think it's his personality that wins me over. Just top achiever, but empathetic, EQ, works damn hard, super successful, humble. I enjoy is the word, Grant. It was a lovely conversation.
But do you know what? There was a lot of cardinality in that these two people are hugely influential in the future of sport and the commerce of sport, and yet both gentlemen absolutely have their finger firmly on the pulse of what it means to be a fan and how important the fan is. In the business.
That's the important. I totally agree, Joel. That's the important thing.
And that to me felt so sympathetic to what the sports fan wants and what the commercial person wants are not always aligned. I feel that gentlemen like these and other investors, I hope that we will find as more and more money comes into sport, where you've got the balance of understanding both the fan, and he talked about it, the art and the science, the fan and money, because if the two are out of kilter, it can be disastrous.
It's so true. You know, when you listen to Al talk about Allen Iverson, I mean, you heard it in his voice. You heard him. He put everything else aside, and he was a kid in the Spectrum. I think they were in the Spectrum, but then I can't remember now. And he was in the arena watching Allen Iverson getting pounded on every night, and you know, in the second row from the back, as he said. And this takes you back there. And I think if you have that grounding, it doesn't matter what part of the business side of sports you're in, you're connected to the actual physical experience of it, and that's how you can be a successful suit in the world of sport. I think without that connection to the game, I just don't know that it's possible to be successful. I really don't.
There was so many things that he said, because he's sitting on two different sides of the fence. You know, with Elevate, he's getting involved in all the stuff we talk about new audiences and new formats and new content and everything like that. The thing I really liked, which he commented on, as he said, in this awful world we have now of tribes, of fragmentation, of nobody agreeing with everybody, sport is the only thing that brings you together, that makes you put down your phone and maybe, put your arm around a complete stranger just because you're sitting beside them in the stadium. I thought he brought that out really well. It was actually really, really nice.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, gents, that just about wraps it up for another week. All that remains, as always, is to thank our guest, Al Guido, for giving us that hour of his very valuable time, and to thank you, our audience. Without you, as I said before, it'd just be three guys talking to each other, and that would be no fun. Trust me, I've spent time talking to these two. So please take a moment, if you have one, to rate and review us in the iTunes store. Please do follow us on Twitter. You'll find us at EntertainedR, that's the word A-R-E. You'll find me at TTMYGH.
And you'll find me, Giles Morgan, at GilesMorgan71.
You'll find myself at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake. Gentlemen, what a treat. Should we do it again?
Let's do that. And thank you to Pump Jack Dataworks. Thank you very much.